Let's resume. The next item on our agenda is 2009-2010, number 15, voting by secret ballot. The time is 10:35 a.m. Let's hear first from the proponents. Mr. Gessler, if you'd identify yourself and who you represent.
Thank you. excuse me. My name is Scott Gessler. I'm with law firm Hagstaff Gessler. I represent the two proponents for this ballot initiative.
Do you have anything that you want to? I have plenty of questions, probably, and other board members may too, but if you have anything you want to.
I'm happy just to very briefly address, and I will be brief on the single subject, and then I'm happy to answer questions with respect to the single subject. Our view of it is that this is a single subject, and the single subject is the right to have secret ballots, and that right is expressed in three specific ways under this initiative, but they're unified and connected to the right to a secret ballot.
I mean, my basic question, which is really a three-part question, which goes straight to that, is, you know, what is the purpose of the measure? What is the subject, first of all? You've sort of partially answered this, I think. What is the single subject? What is the purpose, and what does it actually change in existing law? What is the change or changes in current law?
excuse me. I guess the purpose, I interpret as sort of being connected with the subject.
Correct.
Almost one and the same. You know, it is to ensure that when specific laws require, when there's a federal or state law that requires requires elections, and specifically with respect to elections for public office or initiatives, referenda, or employee designations and representations in the workplace, that when there isn't a required election, that people who vote in those elections have the right to vote by secret ballot, that their votes are not disclosed to anyone. Does that answer your question?
I think so. So the subject is basically the right of secret ballot.
That is correct.
And the purpose is to enhance, promote, preserve, protect that right.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's why it's placed within Section 8 of the Constitution.
And
which is elections by ballot or voting machine. As far as changes to current law, the changes are relatively minimal. It clarifies under current law says all elections by the people. This helps clarify that it's elections to public office, referenda, initiative. And then it also adds a provision with respect to the designations or authorizations of employee representation. That does not exist currently in Colorado law, but it does exist currently in federal law.
So if I could ask, maybe kind of diving into the language, I mean, the first sentence says the right of individuals to vote by secret ballot is fundamental. So what's the effect of that? What's the change in the law there? Is there a change?
No, there's not.
Okay. The next sentence, where state or federal law requires elections for public office or public votes, on an issue of referendum or designations, et cetera. What does public votes mean?
I'm sorry. I'm having some difficulty hearing just because I have a bit
what
of
is, What does the phrase public votes, and I'm not trying to be difficult, but what is a public vote? We're not talking about not just elections for public office now, but we're also talking about public votes on initiatives, referenda, or designations. Are they votes by the public, votes in public, votes
by the public? I think if they were votes in public, that would almost be a contradiction.
And you don't go ahead.
Yeah, it would be, you know, votes by members of the public, you know, eligible members of the public, obviously.
And that gets to my question. It's not all members of the public. It could be a very limited class of members of the public.
That's correct. I mean, and I think even now there are restrictions on votes. For example, votes for initiative or referenda currently in Colorado, you know, in order to be able to vote on that, one cannot be a convicted felon serving a sentence. You know, one has to be a U.S. citizen. So you can, you know, a person can be a member of the public, but not a U.S. citizen. And even now they're currently prohibited from voting on initiatives and referenda in Colorado. So, yeah, there always are some restrictions on how we define public.
But it could be a very restrictive class of the public.
It could be
just employees of a particular employer.
That is correct.
And you would still consider that a public vote if they were voting on designations for authorizations of representation?
Yes. Because it's mandated by public law.
And if that law were to change, would that right still be guaranteed?
Currently the answer is no. With this initiative, the answer would be yes.
So the intent would be to prevent changing, so that if there is a right now under federal law, it could not be changed under this state provision. If it was changed, if the federal law was changed, it would still be preserved by this provision in Colorado.
Yes, and to clarify, that it would be the secret ballot would be preserved.
And since the secret ballot, as I understand it, already applies to votes for public office or votes on initiative and referenda, the real effect of the change is with respect to designations or authorizations of employee representation. Is that correct?
That's the primary, I think, the practical effect, I think, of this language is primarily directed towards the designations and authorizations of employee representation if there are changes along those lines, changes to that law or to the governing laws there in the future. If there aren't changes to those governing laws in the future, in other words, if federal law continues to allow the right to secret ballot, then this would have limited practical impact as well. But it does preserve these particular rights against future changes.
I was trying to think of other situations that are not covered, and I'm not sure whether these are relevant or not. I was thinking, for example, like homeowners association, I don't know whether that's pursuant to state or federal law, but they have votes on officers and matters that come before the homeowners association. I think there are some statutory provisions that govern homeowners associations, but they clearly would not be covered because those types of elections would not be public office, initiative, referenda, or designations for authorization of employee representation.
That is correct.
Nor would public companies, when they have shareholder meetings and their elections, that would not be covered.
That is correct.
Regardless of whether or not there's any state or federal laws that provide for secret ballot, they wouldn't be covered.
That is correct.
Are there other questions for Mr. Gessler? Mr. Carton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gessler, I'm going to follow up on Mr. Hobbs's question about the change to the current provision. And so if I seems like I'm beating a dead horse, I apologize. But basically what you said is that it's my understanding that Article 7, Section 8 currently guarantees the right to a fundamental, guarantees a secret ballot. Is that accurate? In your opinion, I guess, let me phrase it this way. In your opinion, kind of based on your testimony, does the current language of Article 7, Section 8 already recognize the right to vote by a secret ballot and guarantee the right to vote by a secret ballot?
I think it does. For the most part, I think the answer is yes. The, you know, the current law basically says if you use paper ballots or any machine or mechanical contrivance, it discusses those two categories. I think, in all fairness, there could be a question as to whether or not a machine or mechanical contrivance includes voting over the Internet. So there could potentially be an ambiguity under current law there. So that's why I guess I can't agree with you 100% that there could be considered that there could be that ambiguity. Under this, there would be no ambiguity whatsoever.
And as I read the new language, the proposed language, the new language would apply only where state or federal law required the election.
That is correct.
And are there currently any state, with respect to elections involving employee representation, are there, I'm not a labor lawyer here, are there any state or federal requirements relating to elections involving employee representation?
I believe that there are, and I'm not a labor lawyer either, so I'll answer this to the best of my ability. I believe that there are federal laws requiring secret ballot now. I do not, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of any specific states that have that, but there very well could be. I do know, and I can certainly represent to this title board, that that several states are considering adopting similar and almost identical language to this particular initiative, either for changes to their state statute or state constitution.
Thank you. Next question. The current language of Article 7, Section 8 that you just mentioned, talking about paper ballots, does this change that you're proposing make the language of the new subsection 2 in your measure, which relates to paper ballots, contested elections, and the like, does it make subsection 2 applicable to elections involving employee representation?
The intent is not to do that.
And so that provision right now, under current law, arguably applies to popular types of elections involving elected officials, initiative and referendum, and it would not, the new language would not make subsection 2 applicable to employee representation elections. That's your testimony.
That, okay. That's our current intent, yes.
From a drafting standpoint, I kind of look at these as this kind of measure came before the legislature. And as you well know, you've got the election code, which covers the universe of elections. And my question here is, does this particular amendment to Section 8 of Article 7 that brings in employee representation elections, does this... Do those types of, would those elections now in any way be subject to any provisions of the election code or to the administration or regulation of, for example, the Secretary of State's office?
I do not believe so. I mean, I'm the first to admit that that every election cycle brings new surprises in the interpretation of the election code, certainly to me at least. But at this point, I do not, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of any provisions in the current election code that apply to employee representation. It's administered by the Secretary of State.
And final, my last question, and I think I know what your answer will be, but I think that the measure now, the proposed amendment addresses governmental type of elections involving elected officials, measures, those types of things, and employee representation elections, which may be a private matter commercial matter, labor. There are public employee unions. From the standpoint of different subjects, is there an argument that those are unconnected, disparate subjects, and that the measure has issues?
If those arguments do exist, I have no doubt that Mr. Gruskin will capably raise them. But let me at least address, rather than being flippant, try and address your potential concern. The designations of employee representation, to the extent they're mandated by state or federal law, they certainly have a quasi-public element to them. They're not entirely private matters. And for that reason, there is certainly a connection, because the issue is here, the governmental mandate of an election. When a government mandates an election, that's when this provision is triggered. It's not triggered if there's no governmental mandate.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Gessler?
Does the government currently mandate the procedures for those votes that we're talking about? I think you said they do. At least the federal government requires, under current law, a secret ballot, right?
I believe the answer is yes.
Okay.
Move deeper into the question of single subject. In order to sort of frame the issue in my mind, Mr. Gessler, I really am struggling a bit with some of the things that we've touched upon so far, that it looks like what the measure is primarily about is employee representation, elections, or designations. It's placed in the Constitution where we see things dealing with elections for public office and so forth. And it says that the right of secret ballot is fundamental, which you indicated is not a change in the law. And there is a potential objection, it seems to me, that that, as Mr. Carton was, I think, sort of raising, that that this kind of falls under one or two of the principles that the General Assembly put forward when they proposed the single subject amendment, that the single subject was intended to guard against. And one of them, well, and I'm, of course I'm looking in 1-40-106.5. The General Assembly said that one of the purposes was to forbid the treatment of incongruous subjects in the same measure, especially the practice of putting together in one measure subjects having no necessary or proper connection for the purpose of enlisting in support of the measure the advocates of each measure, and thus securing the enactment of measures that could not be carried upon their own merits. And I'm sort of thinking, on the one hand, we have a principle like secret ballot, which is, I would think, universally accepted in the normal elections that people are thinking about in terms of public office and so forth. But on the other hand, secret ballot with respect to employee representation is something that I think is much more up in the air. And this, at first blush, arguably would be the kind of thing that the single subject requirement was intended to guard against.
I'm sorry, can you say that last time?
Arguably, this is the kind of thing that the single subject amendment was intended to guard against.
Well, let me address a couple of your points. I guess first we would disagree that this this initiative is primarily about designations or authorizations of employee representation. One can certainly look at what you think the practical impact of it may be. And so people can certainly argue, well, the practical impact is primarily upon that point. Okay? But that doesn't necessarily mean that this is what this ballot initiative is primarily about. So I guess I would disagree with that characterization. I think the other thing is that When, I think the key issue is the public mandate of a vote here. And I don't think that there is a difference between, in that sense, a difference between a public mandate of a vote or a public office or an initiative referendum and a public and a mandate of a vote for employee designation and representation. They are both, you know, backed up by the power of whether it's the state or the federal government, and it is a requirement of the vote. And I would also say that, you know, currently, and we're not certainly hiding, I mean, currently there is discussion about the secrecy of the ballot with respect to, you know, mandated votes, employee representation. But there very well have been times, and very well likely will be future times, of intense discussion about the secrecy of a vote with respect to the public office. I mean, historically, probably for about half our nation's history, we didn't have secret ballots until the introduction of the Australian ballot in the very late 1800s. And even now, there are movements afoot, for example, for internet voting. And, you know, I mean, there are respected computer scientists who have said that it is impossible to ensure the secrecy of the ballot with internet voting. And so there, I think you're going to face also, and this goes back to the current mechanical contrivance, the machine and mechanical contrivance in Section 2, I think that debate and discussion very well may be coming to the fore relatively soon. So I guess I would challenge the assumption that that particular portion of this initiative has no realistic meaning or has no controversy about it. So I think the key element, though, from the single subject is the it's when state or federal law requires elections. When there is that public mandate for elections, that is really sort of the unifying principle.
Can I ask you a couple questions? One about that. Are there things carved out of the coverage of this measure, though, that involve elections that are required by state or federal law? In other words, why not, with that second sentence, just stop after where state or federal law requires elections? Did you mean to cut out homeowners associations? I don't even know if state law requires elections. It may. I'm curious if your unifying theme there is too broad because you've actually carved things out of its coverage.
Well, I guess that's a good question with respect to how single subject works. I guess the implication of that comment is if we had simply said, you know, we're federal law requires elections for public office or public employee votes, and then say the right of individuals to vote by secret ballot shall be guaranteed. My sense is that your implication is there would be very few single subject questions with respect to that. But if from a public policy standpoint we want to maintain that theme yet restrict its application, then suddenly there are single subject requirements. In other words, a narrower scope creates single subject issues, whereas a broader scope doesn't create single subject issues, even though logically the two contain the same elements. So I guess my response to that is, I think the proponents from a public policy standpoint chose not to enumerate everything, and they certainly have the ability to do that without losing a single subject requirement.
Well, I'm not sure I share your view of the single subject. As long as you can name something, a broad theme that itself would qualify, you can do pick and choose from within it. anything you'd like to do. I mean, you could pass something about the due process clause, would I think qualify as a single subject if you just stated it broadly. But if you were to say due process shall be preserved, and then you started saying this is due process, this is not due process, this is, I think you would have a single subject problem, even though the broader subject would be okay. I'm not saying I have a problem with this necessarily. I'm just curious if there are things that were carved out that would make it possibly more complicated.
I don't have enough knowledge to all the things that federal or state law requires elections for.
Let me ask you another question that something you said raised. Is one of the intentions of this to prohibit internet voting?
I don't think that is the intention. But I think the intention is, if there is other methods of voting, and if the internet is not considered machine or mechanical contrivance, in other words, it wouldn't be covered under the new subsection 2. I think whatever voting there exists, there needs to be the ability to preserve the secrecy of the ballot on that.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, if there's no other questions for Mr. Gessler, then I'd like to turn to Mr. Gruskin, who has signed up to testify. And I don't have anyone else signed up to testify, but please do sign up if you would like to testify. Mr. Gruskin.
Mr. Chairman, members, I have a couple of jurisdictional issues that I'd like to raise. And to do so, I think it would be probably helpful to a couple of handouts. I would ask that they be made part of this record. First jurisdictional argument actually doesn't relate to the single subject entirely. And I'm a little uncomfortable making this argument, not because of the substance, but because I don't want anyone to think that this is a personal shot, because it's not. It's not intended as a personal shot. But I believe that Mr. Domenico is in a challenged position in terms of acting, not because of anything he's done or said or in any way, shape, or form put himself in a position that's problematic. But there's a parent organization for this effort. It is called Save Our Secret Ballot. It's a national organization. It's clearly affiliated with this effort. It even proposes national language that reflects this effort. The first handout I've given you is the cover page from its website. And at the bottom of the second page, you can see that the Attorney General is a member of the National Advisory Board for this group. As I say, there's absolutely nothing that Mr. Domenico has done to put his or the Attorney General's representation in jeopardy. I hope you understand that, Mr. It's not about you at all, frankly. But the Attorney General has, by endorsing this language, already taken a position as to its general adequacy, and presumably because I feel the Attorney General would, in all instances, work to live up to his oath of office, he must believe that this comprises a single subject. His designee can't possibly be in a position, in light of that, that would be unaffected by the position taken by Mr. Southers. And frankly, this is not an instance where Mr. Southers' name appears as an individual. It appears with his official title as Colorado Attorney General. There is ample case law about the role of a public attorney, both avoiding an actual conflict and an appearance of impropriety, and the fact that when there is such an issue that everyone in his office is conflicted out. I am not really trying to create a jurisdictional problem here for the board, and I hope you understand that. However, no one in this room created that problem. The Attorney General Southers, by signing on to this language, has, in my view, put his designee in a very precarious position, one that simply can't be reasonably negotiated. And that is not to say that the title board can't act. The board has the capacity to act with only two members. I'm not suggesting that you're not in a position to set a title. But I am suggesting that this issue bleeds over into the single subject argument. As I've already indicated, we think there are severe single subject arguments. We think that this group, the national sponsor of this language, admits that there are single subject issues. And I'm happy to lay those out. But the role of Attorney General Southers in endorsing this language before it comes to the title board and before his designee is permitted to act necessarily puts, frankly, puts Mr. Gessler in a tough spot because he's representing the Attorney General before the Attorney General. And frankly, if you happen to agree that there is a single subject problem, puts Mr. Kneiser in a difficult position because then he'll be representing the designee of the Attorney General against the Attorney General. It's not to suggest that Mr. Domenico, frankly, by his questions, I'm not sure that he might not agree with me. But I think that in terms of the general tenor of this proceeding and the right thing to do, that there probably ought to be a two-person title board because of Attorney General Southers' judgment already that this is something that belongs on the Colorado ballot in the form that was proposed at the national level, which I believe, with the exception of one word, a disjunctive or, is exactly the same as the language before.
Thank you, Mr. Gruskin. And let's pause at that. I do, you know, I'm trying to think back on to the extent that we've faced similar situations. I think I do recall some years ago the representative of the Attorney General recusing himself with respect to a situation. I think it may have been a water measure, I'm not sure, where the Attorney General was actually an active proponent of the measure in the state. Not sure that's the same situation here, but you know, I can appreciate that attorneys general take positions on matters of public concern, and you know, I'm trying to, in my own mind, to trying to decide at what point that may be problematic, although I don't think it's up to me. I think it's really up to each member of the board to determine whether they need to recuse themselves or not. So.
Well, I'm happy to let Mr. Gessler respond before I do.
I do have a letter here, and I either in a break, we can make some quick copies to distribute to the board, from Attorney General John Southers to Attorney General Shurtleff in Utah, discussing this exact issue. And I'll read the entire content of the letter. And what it says, Dear General Shurtleff, thanks for your letter of April 13th, 2009, regarding the Save Our Secret Ballot. Sure that I'm completely on board. As soon as the matter passes through our title board, I will endorse it and publicly encourage Colorado voters to approve it. I agree with your assessment that the results of a legal fight about federal preemption is difficult to predict, but it is a battle well worth fighting. I look forward to working with you on this issue. Signed, Mr. Southers. So I guess I have 2 points. By this letter, I think the Attorney General has taken a position where he has not endorsed this, but he will endorse it if in fact it goes through the title board process. And I think secondly, with respect to the I'm assuming it's a request for recusal here, with respect to that, I think there still has to be a couple elements that you have to meet. And one has to, I think, either a formal conflict here, or a particularized knowledge with respect to, or particularized facts with respect to his duties in a fair and even-handed manner. And I don't think that that has been met either. I think if we were to adopt a standard where every time a public official, an elected public official, whether that's the Attorney General or the Secretary of State, or perhaps a resolution of the state legislature on a matter of public policy involving a ballot initiative, if we were to adopt a policy that every time they make a stance on that, they're automatically, their representatives are automatically recused from this title board, I think that would ultimately wind up being a very unworkable standard. At some point, we have to have faith that the appointed officials will do their duties unless there's a particularized reason why they cannot.
Thank you. Any further discussion on this issue? Mr. Domenico?
Well, I guess I appreciate Mr. Gruskin bringing this to my attention. I can assure you the Attorney General and I have had no discussions about this, which is why this is, frankly, a surprise to me. And I appreciate what both Mr. Gruskin and Mr. Gessler have said. I've actually recused myself once in the past from a measure because the Attorney General had taken a position on it. I think I agree with Mr. Gessler that it's probably unnecessary to do so. I don't think that Mr. Souther's endorsement of this as a policy matter is a legal endorsement of it. And I think that anyone who knows my relationship with Mr. Souther's would recognize that I wouldn't be afraid to disagree with him if I felt I should. On the other hand, I think the appearance here is at least as important as the fact of any potential conflict. And even though I did ask Mr. Gessler some hard questions, I was going to have some hard ones for you too, I hope, Mr. Gruskin. And I would not want my vote or my questioning even to be the cause of calling into question the integrity of the process. So I think I will recuse myself from this.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Domenico. Then we will resume. Mr. Gruskin, you have other issues with respect to jurisdiction or single subject?
Your Honor, Mr. Chairman, I do. With regard to the single subject, I think it is relatively clear that this is a measure that was designed to do two things. And I say this because if you take a look at the second handout that I've given you, the one that's 4 pages long, this is specific to the Colorado measure. This is run as a web page that's part of the national measure. And if I may, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to just read some very specific parts into the record. The first paragraph says, quote, the card check legislation making its way through Congress would redefine the definition of secret ballots in Colorado. Threatening the fundamental right of individuals to vote by secret ballot in Colorado is the result of passing the Employee Free Choice Act, otherwise known as card check. The sentence at the bottom is a key. You can stop this congressional power grab and preserve your right to vote by secret ballot in Colorado. Well, most people are not in unions. So to the extent that it is talking about preserving your right to vote by secret ballot, clearly it's talking about a general, more fundamental type of election with which people are familiar. The second page continues to talk about these issues, and as you will see, for instance, in the next last paragraph, it is entirely focused upon the employee-union relationships. There is very little conversation about the nature of general elections. This has two single-subject problems. Number one, I would submit to you that the idea here is to talk in vague generalities about secret ballot, have people focus upon issues of public elections, and surreptitiously put in within the measure something that is not a public election. I say that in light of the questioning from the board already, but also, if you take a look at the existing Article 7, Section 8 of the Constitution, it is all about those types of public elections. What is now denominated as Section 2 says all elections by the people shall be by ballot. And what is now denominated as Subsection 3 talks about the governing body of any city, county, city, city and county or town, et cetera, et cetera. These are clearly public elections. These are clearly for public office, on initiatives, and the like. And to treat a purely private relationship as the same thing, guided by the same fundamental undergirding principles, is simply to use one as cover for the other. And if that was not apparent before, I think that the second half of the single subject analysis, how closely related are these subjects? Well, the conversation that you had earlier was pretty apparent. This election could end up being about internet voting for some folks, and it's going to end up being about unions for others. Where is the crossover? What is the connection? You don't have anything akin to the same electorate or the same kind of electorate or the same qualifications for being within the electorate. This is particularly problematic because Initiative 15 doesn't change existing law as to what we typically think of as elections that are covered by that constitutional provision. That was very clear. It doesn't change that. And frankly, even the internet discussion, I think it's questionable whether or not that's a substantive change as much as a continuation of the admonition for a secret ballot. The change comes as to elections, as the website points out, that relate to unions and the employer-employee relationship. And frankly, the fact that that is the emphasis, but that is not what the text says, there is no reason. Because it doesn't change existing law, there is no reason for the opening clause. There's no reason for the opening clauses of Initiative Number 15. They are simply political fluff. They are cover so that the meaty topic of dealing with the employer-employee relationship is not nearly so obvious. And I would suggest to you that that is exactly, in the aftermath of Tabor, what the voters were concerned about not really having a full sense of what they were voting on, because there were other Christmas tree kinds of elements to the measure, and would ask you to return this measure to the proponents and have them submit too, so that they can achieve both objectives, and more to the point, so that voters can consider both objectives, but do so independently. Happy to take any questions, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for Mr. Gruskin? I don't think so at this time. Thank you. Gessler, would you like to respond?
Certainly. With respect to the two single subject concerns expressed by Mr. Gruskin, I'll take them each in order. First, with respect to the surreptitiousness of this issue, I think if there's any ballot measure that is not surreptitious or that has nothing surreptitious within it, this would be it. In fact, I guess going forward a little bit to actually look at the potential staff draft, it contains almost every single word within this initiative. There's nothing hidden within the folds. It's all very straightforward. Unlike, and I think the Tabor analogy is absolutely incorrect. If you look at Tabor, that contains a lot of words, a lot of clauses, a lot of provisions. It's easy to get lost within that. Whereas this is fundamentally the opposite. There is simply no surreptitiousness here. There are three elements that that fall within the secret ballot requirement. They're clearly articulated. They're very short. The entire initiative itself, I think, is only about 25 or 26 words. So I don't think that the surreptitiousness is a persuasive argument whatsoever. With respect to the next item, that the various items guaranteed by that receive the guarantee of the secret ballot are not closely related. You know, it seems as though there were two arguments for that. One is the changes in current law, and two is that it involves different electorates. Well, I guess the first, with respect to the changing in law, and the fact of the matter is, right now, even the secret ballot provision with respect to the designations and authorizations of employee representation doesn't change law. It just doesn't change current law. Current law doesn't change. This will have very limited impact. So I think I don't think that's that's persuasive whatsoever. Secondly, with respect to the differing electorate, and I know Mr. Carton brought this up a little bit. I mean, even now, initiatives, referendum, public office, there are different electorates for each one of those. I mean, the large counties themselves have hundreds of different ballot styles because there are different electorates for different types of offices and for different types of elections, and almost a bewildering complexity when you look at that statewide. So as far as changing the actual type of electorate, that being a meaningful distinction, I don't think it is, because even now the secret ballot, even if one simply confines it to public offices, there is really a bewildering variety. I shouldn't say bewildering, but just a huge variety and huge variation in the actual makeup of the electorate that votes for any one of those particular public offices, even within that subset. So it's difficult to see how that is a meaningful distinction.
Questions for Mr. Gessler?
Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the single subject question? Seeing none, then I'll turn to board discussion. Is there any discussion by the board? Mr. Carton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With respect to single subject, I'm having some difficulty with that piece right now. And I really have always viewed my role as a title board member to give the proponents, consistent with the case law, that indicates that the single subject requirement should be liberally construed to. I really work at finding the connection and the congruity. The kind of where I'm coming from on this is that you've got a statutory requirement in 140.106.5 that we've talked about that talks about in connection with single subject, the reason that it's in place is to forbid the treatment of incongruous subjects in the same measure, especially the practice of putting together in one measure subjects having no necessary or proper connection. For the purpose of enlisting in support of the measure, the advocates of each measure, and thus securing the enactment of measures that could not be carried upon their merits. And then secondly, kind of consistent with the discussion, an issue that Mr. Gruskin raised and that Mr. Gessler addressed, to prevent surreptitious measures and apprise the people of the subject of each measure by the title, and that is to prevent surprise and fraud from being practiced upon the voters. And I appreciate Mr. Gessler's explanation of the scope of the measure, but at base, it doesn't seem to me that the first sentence, for example, of the new language, the right of individuals to vote by secret ballot is fundamental, changes in any significant or relevant way the right that is already guaranteed to a secret ballot under the current provisions of Article 7, Section 8. And so it does seem as though the measure doesn't really change the law relative to secret ballots in connection with votes for public office or votes on initiative or referenda or elections for counties and cities, paper ballots, the like, that the change goes to designations or authorizations of employee representations and elections involving those. And so if you jumped ahead to the staff draft, I know that's jumping ahead, but the proposed title there is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the fundamental right of individuals to vote by secret ballot. And to me, I think there are issues, and I'm almost reluctant to say this, of surreptitiousness or something, in fact, being kind of coiled in the folds of the measure. I'm not sure that, for example, that title would really express the changes being made as a statement of single subject, the changes being made to the law. I think that the constitutional provision right now addresses public election, you know, public votes, elections that we commonly know that are governed by the election code, that involve public officials, that involve public measures, right down to special districts and the like. And then I'm not completely certain that bringing into that provision kind of an extension of the or a provision that relates to elections involving employee representation, that those two, I can't say that those aren't separate and unconnected. And so right now, I guess I'm struggling with whether or not the board has jurisdiction to set the title on single subject grounds. I think there are single subject issues with this one, and I appreciate Mr. Gessler and Mr. Gruskin's testimony on this.
I'm essentially where you are, Mr. Carton. And also where you start. As a member of the title board, I really do feel like it's not the title board's role to take overly technical views of measures and pick them apart and find multiple subjects. I think in my mind there's an obligation to construe measures in a way that furthers the right of initiative. I really am struggling with this one, though, because you know, for the reasons that have been identified, we are obligated, if we set a title, to clearly express the single subject, and as you referred to, the staff draft attempts to do it in terms of the fundamental right of individuals to vote by secret ballot. And I think the measure is about that. It would be easier for me to see that as the single subject if the measure really preserved the secret ballot it seems to do it in two areas. One is where the secret ballot already exists, elections for public office and initiative and referenda. Granted, I think it's intended to preserve that, to constitutionalize that, maybe in a stronger way or something, but that's not that's something. But then it jumps to the employee representation situation alone without considering the broad fundamental right of individuals to vote by secret ballot. There are other elections that the right of secret ballot could be preserved and recognized and preserved. But there is something incongruous in my mind about trying to preserve the right of secret ballot with respect to public elections for public office and initiative and referenda, and then just going to basically union representation elections and not other kinds of elections. And it really does seem a little surreptitious, and I don't mean that about motives. I'm not talking about improper motives. In fact, what I think I sense is that the proponents believe in the secret ballot and do connect it to the concept of secret ballot that is in our Constitution. But it still feels like it's misplaced in the context of public elections for public office. I think that in the public mind, this is a, and I don't know whether the right characterization is commercial or whatever the setting is, but these are really quite different elections. And there's other elections out there that are not so protected. And it does seem incongruous to a degree to me, and I'm probably more persuaded by the log rolling aspects, the potential for trying to enlist public support for something that might be pretty controversial by cloaking it in the principle that is universally, I think, accepted, and in fact the major effect here really is, it still seems to me, the preserving the right of a secret ballot for employee representation elections, and that could be completely separated from elections for public office and initiatives and referenda, where there really is no change proposed by the measure, hardly any change at all. And I'm not articulating that very well, but it really is one of those things where it feels like this is not, it feels like it is the kind of thing that the General Assembly spoke against when they proposed the single subject measure, referring back to 1-40-106.5. So I think at this point, I'm persuaded that there is a violation of single subject. So, I think I'm going to go ahead and make a motion then that the board find that the measure does not comprise a single subject and deny title setting for number 15.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 2-0. And that concludes action on number 15. The time is 11:33 a.m.